Hello and welcome to the Health Hacks Podcast, the podcast for high-performing professional females looking for practical ways to optimize all areas of their health and wellness. At Health Hacks, we understand that as a busy female, you wear numerous hats throughout your working week. You're trying to juggle it all, while also looking to carve out time to prioritize your own goals. It's challenging. It's therefore our mission to channel your energy into the areas that are going to help give you the biggest bang for your buck, to really make significant changes to your lifestyle in the most efficient way possible. So at the moment, if you feel as though you need more energy, you want to feel more productive to improve the quality of your sleep, to lower stress, to increase confidence, to show up better in both your personal and your professional relationships, this podcast is for you. If it's time you prioritize your health, learn to fuel your body, found time for exercise, and said goodbye to fad diets and inconsistent behaviors for good, this podcast is for you. If it's time for you to step into the shoes of the high performer you know you can be, this is the right podcast for you. Join me and my guests as we take you through the Health Hacks Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Health Hacks Podcast. Absolutely thrilled to have you. Another installment of our menopause specific series. A huge warm welcome if you're joining us for the first time. This is the third installment in this little corner of Health Hacks dedicated to menopause. Welcome. As I mentioned way back at the start, this series of podcasts was intended either to be a walkthrough. So every fortnight, we're going to be diving into a specific topic around menopause, and you're more than welcome to start at the beginning and walk through these topics with me, or alternatively, jump to the episode that, you know, speaks to you, that you want to find out more about. They are intended to work as a series, but also to be standalone episodes. And we're going to be talking about nutrition today. I have a funny feeling that that's going to be a big one. I will just take a moment to say a huge thank you to the ladies who have reached out and have been finding a ton of value in this particular area of health hacks. I know that we cover very extensive topics and we've got some amazing experts on the show. Thank you to the ladies who have reached out and said the menopause content in particular has been eye-opening to me. I knew about perimenopause, menopause and postmenopause. I have been aware of some of the symptoms, but this really has opened my eyes. And to you ladies in particular, thank you so much. And even more so to the women who have mentioned that they've forwarded the podcast on to others who they think would find a ton of value in the work that we do. So from the bottom of my heart, a huge thank you. It does mean the absolute world. The whole point of the podcast is to reach as many ears as possible and to ultimately add as much value as we can. So sincerely, it makes the time sitting recording. Sometimes it feels very strange, particularly these solo episodes when it's just you and the microphone and your notes. So it really does mean the absolute world that to know that this content does reach you in your ears, whatever you may be doing while you listen to this. So if you would like to show your support for the show, as ever, there are two ways to do it. You can do so if you scroll down on your podcast platform of choice. You're probably listening to me on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you scroll down and hit either the follow or the subscribe button on those platforms, you can follow the show and you never need to search for us again. We will arrive in your podcast inbox every single week and you can tune in and to whatever topic we are covering that week. If you would like to send on to someone in your inner circle, I would be hugely appreciative. If they are close to you and you have similar values and you've found the work that we do helpful to you in your health and well-being journey, likely they will too. So if you do feel in a position where you'd want to send the podcast on to someone in your inner circle, do so. I'd be very, very grateful. And as ever, if our message here on Health Hacks, and particularly if my message has resonated with you and you like our approach, our ethos to health and well-being, and you'd like to find out more about one-to-one coaching, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to find out more about your current lifestyle, the barriers that you feel that you're facing at the moment, but more importantly, I'd love to hear about your goals for this year, where you want to be. When you know where you want to be, you know you want to make a change. It's up to me to step in and find a way to make that happen for you. And perhaps you've been listening for a while and thought, perhaps one-to-one coaching is the next step for me in my journey. Perhaps you listen to a lot of podcasts, but you want to find out more about how all of this information may work for you and be applicable to you, then one-to-one coaching may be the next step. If you'd like to find out more, there is a link in the show notes below to find out more about our coaching services and to book an introductory call with me. And that call is really, really informal. It's literally just a chance for us to sit down and have a chat, find out more about whether we would be the right fit for you on your journey. Okay, without further ado, let's get into this week's episode. We're talking, of course, about nutrition today. And there are four reasons, really, that nutrition is generally put under the microscope during a menopausal journey. One, of course, is general health. So menopause, and remember, I'm using menopause as the umbrella term. You may feel that you are or identify with being at a perimenopausal stage, menopausal or postmenopause. But generally speaking, this is a time of life when women become a lot more aware of their general health. It's a time when we can typically become more aware of our body and mind and start looking inwards. Perhaps to a certain extent, you've managed to, up until this point, get away with certain dieting behaviors. You know, life is busy, we're go, go, go all the time. Perhaps grabbing and going has been a staple in your approach to nutrition up until this point, but you've gotten to a stage where you are becoming more conscious of your body and mind through a health lens. The second reason we often hone in on nutrition is weight gain. So ladies will generally express at this time that they notice weight gain. It's very, very typical and a big conversation that we have around menopause. The third reason is linked to the weight gain, but a change in body shape. So women describe typically holding more body fat around their abdominal region, for example. And the last one, the reason that nutrition is often considered in more detail during the menopausal journey is due to energy and fatigue. So if you are experiencing low energy, you feel tired a lot of the time, it could be a huge, huge issue. One of the ways that we can obviously boost energy or manage our energy during the day is through sleep and through the food that we consume. So generally speaking, I'd want to have a close look at a lady's nutritional protocols. I'd like to spend just a moment understanding the science behind what's going on. And as ever, with a lot of this, a lot of the behind the scenes stuff, we'll be talking about hormones. And I firmly believe with this that the more that we understand what's going on, it can help us make more rational and logical decisions. And as we know, if you're ever someone who's experienced, we've all experienced cravings, sometimes nutrition in particular doesn't always feel rational or logical. Ask anyone who's ever been hangry. But generally speaking, in menopause, nearly all women will experience a change to their body shape during this time of life, during perimenopause and menopause. It's usually due to fluctuations in hormone levels. And as we mentioned, this can be a really good time to start reflecting on both our food choices and exercise and focus on the here and now, but also our future health and well-being. Two hormones that we're going to discuss, and hopefully by this point in our series, you'll be familiar with both of them. But estrogen, firstly, fluctuating and ultimately declining levels of estrogen, and specifically ovarian estrogen, it can affect several pathways in the body. And it's why many of these common symptoms that we've been speaking about up until this point, that they happen. So we have estrogen receptors all over our body. Every single cell in the body, from our brain all the way to our gut, has estrogen receptors. And your body starts to recognize at a cellular level the decreasing levels of estrogen. And it will try to obtain different forms of estrogen produced elsewhere in the body. And these different estrogen forms are produced by fat cells. So many women will describe at this time that they start to develop. Now, I'm not a particular fan of either of these phrases, but they will describe it as being maybe a spare tire around the belly, the fat that sits in the abdomen, or menopause belly is another phrase that we'll hear. And this is a in response. And it can also come along with strong cravings for foods. Now, these foods, annoyingly, we don't tend to crave salads and fruits and vegetables and all these things, we tend to crave foods higher in sugar or on healthy fats. It's typical, isn't it? And this is when the body will start to lay down abdominal fat. We may also find that there are changes to our visceral fat. So that's our internal fat. And what will tend to happen is ladies will find that they may never have experienced fat around their middle before, but as they go through their menopause journey, they find that they're holding more fat here. The reason that this can be dangerous, or that there can be potential health risks associated with this, is because essentially this fat is gathering closer to our internal organs. And as you can imagine, in terms of long-term health, this is something that we want to avoid. So ultimately, menopause belly, or that spare tire, it's talked about a lot, and it's definitely a consideration for a lot of women, but for a lot of health reasons, irrespective of aesthetic reasons, for a lot of health reasons, there are a lot of reasons we would want to limit or reduce this as much as possible. So estrogen is playing its role, but so is testosterone. It's another important female hormone. I'll repeat, we talked about this previously, but testosterone, it's not just for the men. We actually produce more testosterone than estrogen from our ovaries, and a decline in those levels can impact our muscle mass specifically. So it can lead to decrease in muscle mass and ultimately lower energy levels. This can affect our baseline metabolic rate, or BMR, if you've ever heard of a BMR, and it means that we are burning fewer calories with exactly the same nutritional intake as before perimenopause. And this can be very, very frustrating, that what was working for us pre-perimenopause stops being as effective nutritionally, because that lowering of the testosterone means that our muscle mass can be compromised. We're going to talk more about muscle mass in the exercise podcast, or the exercise installment of this series. But for now, just be aware of declining estrogen, but also testosterone. When it comes to weight management, two other lifestyle factors are really, really, really important. And these are things that I would be talking about with a client, irrespective of whether they were at menopausal age or even thinking about menopause. Weight management is made much, much easier if you have the foundations in place in regards to sleep and stress. We've spoken a lot over the podcast about management of both of those lifestyle factors. And ultimately, weight loss, it's like, it really is like pushing a heavy object up a big hill. Really, really, really challenging, and made much harder if those foundational lifestyle components of sleep and stress are not in place. I know that these can be more challenging around the menopausal window, but I think it's important to be aware of that. I have a lot of ladies who've come to me saying that they've been tracking their calories or monitoring their nutritional intake, but they don't sleep enough and their stress levels are absolutely through the roof. Make sure that you have those in place. Wade Foster was on the podcast talking about leadership health, and he described both sleep and stress as the gateways to health. And I think that's really, really important. We go on about nutrition and exercise all the time, but sleep and stress, they need to have their place as well. And we need to have those foundations. So something to consider. We are here today to talk about nutrition. So let's crack on and do that. You have hopefully listened to lots of recordings of mine on the Health Hacks podcast, and you've hopefully listened to my approach when it comes to nutrition. So caveat to this episode, there isn't going to be a lightning bolt, a penny drop moment, or a secret that I'm going to disclose around menopause nutrition, because to put it very, very simply, there is no such thing as a menopause specific diet. And I say that not to deflate you. I can't be any clearer on that. I want to remove the pressure that comes with, we hit menopause and everything has to change overnight. There's a whole set of new nutritional principles, and this, I'm going to have to adopt this whole other way of eating. And that's simply not true. It really, really isn't. When it comes to menopause nutrition, there are certainly considerations, and I'm going to go through these. I'm going to talk about how I've been very, very careful about the areas that I'm going to focus on in this podcast. I'm going to relate them specifically to menopause and highlight why they're important at this time of life. But hopefully you'll recognize that I have mentioned these principles before in other contexts. And that's because they are the foundations of a positive diet, positive patterns of eating. And like I say, there is no magic menopause diet. And if you have been looking at advice online, or you're interested in working with someone who promises that there is such a thing, I'd be very, very careful about what that involves. And if I'm really honest, and I don't say this to be cynical at all, but I would look at whether they have a particular product or series of supplements or specific coaching model to sell you, because let's just, you know, break out the world's worst kept secret. There isn't a menopause specific diet. But let's run through the nutritional practices that I'm going to suggest that you, as perimenopausal or menopausal, postmenopausal women, should consider when looking at nutrition, because there are some adjustments that we might need to make, but it shouldn't be new. And the first one is eat more whole foods. Told you, it's not anything new, but roll with me on this one. So what do I mean by whole foods? First and foremost, we're going to talk about this on a spectrum. And on one side of the sliding scale, we have our whole foods. And this is food in its simplest form. So straight out of the ground, straight off the tree, roots, shoots, lean cuts of meat, food that hasn't been tampered with. It's essentially, it's as God intended. And then on the extreme, the other side of the scale, we have our processed and ultra processed foods. And they tend to be foods that come in the packet. They've got a long ingredients list and they've typically got a really long shelf life. So when it comes to asking how whole or processed your food is, ask yourself how long it would last if you left it out of the fridge. If it would decay very, very quickly, it's likely to be a whole food. If it would last forever and ever, processed, generally speaking. And I've had many clients approach me recently. There's been a book, I believe it hit the bestseller list, but there was a book that came out recently and I read it. It's called Ultra Processed People by Chris Van Tulliken. And I think it's been given a lot of press. And I believe that the author has been on some really notable podcasts, which, as we know, are often clipped up and put out on social media in shorts, etc. So I know this book has had a lot of attention. And one of the things that I actually really liked about the book, there was one particular part that had, it's called the NOVA food classification system, which basically breaks down food into four groups. So if we think about the sliding scale that I've just been talking about, on one side whole foods, the other side ultra processed, this NOVA food classification basically breaks down food into four categories, which I think can be quite helpful. You know, like a lot in life, things aren't always black and white, whole or processed, right? There's some gray areas in the middle. And this really helped me. I like the visual representation of this, and it really helped me get to grips with the sliding scale. So I'm going to run through it with you today. On one end of the spectrum, group one in this NOVA food classification is your unprocessed or your minimally processed food. So these is the whole foods that I've been talking about, natural food. And they described it as foods that are obtained directly from plants or animals and do not undergo any alterations following their removal from nature. So these are things like natural packaged or frozen vegetables. Frozen vegetables still count. Lentils, chickpeas, legumes, meat, fresh or pasteurized milk or yogurt, dried or fresh pasta. And I was absolutely thrilled to see that they classified coffee in the group one section. So amazing. So group one is your unprocessed foods. Then you've got group two, which are your oils, your fats, salts and sugars. So basically, these are foods that you add to group one to make more variety in the diet. So these would be oils, fats, salt, sugar, used in a small amount for seasoning and cooking foods and to create culinary preparations. So the classification here, they've said as long as they're used in moderation, based on natural or minimally processed foods, they can contribute towards diverse and delicious diets without rendering them nutritionally unbalanced. So this is things like butter, honey, oils, starches, Think of group one and group two going beautifully together. So, to add a little bit more intrigue and variety to our whole foods. So, the next one we move down the scale is group three. This is our processed foods. So, essentially, this is taking group one, our whole foods, and adapting them in such a way that will allow them to last longer. So, generally speaking, it's combining group one and group two to create processed foods that can be preserved longer or made more palatable is in the definition here. Generally speaking, most processed foods have two or three ingredients, and we're looking at things now like canned vegetables, bacon, salted meats, canned fish. Alcohol goes into this processed foods category. So this is where we start to go down the sliding scale until we get to group four, which are our ultra processed foods. And the definition, ultra processed foods are industrial formulations made entirely or mostly from substances extracted from foods. So oils, fats, sugar, starch, and proteins derived from food constitutes, so hydrogenated fats and modified starches, or synthesized in laboratories from food substrates or other organic sources. And this is where we start to get into making food essentially as indestructible as we possibly can. How long can we have it lasting on our shelves? And this is where we start to see food groups like ice cream, desserts, biscuits, energy drinks, breakfast cereals. All the good stuff, right? So those are our ultra processed foods. So essentially, we want to ensure we're eating foods from group one and group two. And I know I'm going into a little bit more detail here, but it's because I really do feel that to its detriment, the term whole foods is being used so much in the health and well-being space that people aren't really paying attention anymore. And I mean it sincerely, if you only did one thing to your diet by prioritizing whole foods, it would transform how you felt, how you slept at night, your energy levels, your aesthetic, your weight management, if you only did this one thing. So I've put it number one at the top of this list. And I don't think that we are giving it the airtime, or we're hearing the phrase whole foods, but not reflecting on whether we actually eat whole food diets. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the tools that I use to work with my clients on their nutrition, but I'm going to put this number one, eating more whole foods. And think back to the last couple of meals you had, or the last couple of snacks that you had. Were they in a packet? Did you was it a piece of fruit? Was it something that you ate consciously? Was it mindless grazing? What about the breakfast that you had? How many whole foods were in there? Did you grab a box of cereal, or did you maybe make some eggs for breakfast? What about dinner last night? What did that look like? I think it's good to put this theory into practice and really reflect on how it shows up in our own lives. Okay, the second one, eating more protein. I've mentioned the preservation of lean muscle tissue, but why is this so important, particularly in menopause? Well, a couple of reasons. Muscle is there to protect our skeleton. It's there to help us in terms of mobility. So I certainly want to, as I age, I want to be able to lift and move and get upstairs. I want to be able to get out of my chair in my later years. And muscle mass is a way to help ensure that. Someone with a higher muscle mass will also have increased basal metabolic rate, BMR. So muscle utilizes the energy that we take from calories in a really efficient way. So, simply put, the more muscle mass that you have on your frame, the more calories that you require, and ultimately, the more food you can eat, which is a win-win. So, we want muscle on our frame. And that doesn't mean being a bodybuilder. So I would personally argue the demographics that should be most interested in protein intake are the bodybuilding community and the menopause. But it's really, really important that we consider our muscle mass
on our frame. And I had this conversation with a client very recently. Actually, this lady had come to me with her results from, and you may be familiar with these, a lot of gyms have them. It's the body scanners whereby you stand on them, you generally hold the handles, and it will give you a ton of information back in regards to your sometimes skeletal mass, your body fat percentage. This was the particular metric that this lady was interested in. And she came to me with her body fat percentage, and with all the love in the world, I was looking at that metric, yep, but I'm actually more interested in her muscle mass, and explained the reasons for that actually, although your body fat percentage is something that we may want to be conscious of, I'm more interested in how high your muscle mass is at this time of life, particularly because a higher muscle mass is linked with a lower risk of death by all-cause mortality. If you want to bulletproof and bolster against preventable diseases, the one thing to look at would be the amount of muscle mass on your frame. So if you're interested in longevity, that's the thing to hone in on, is that muscle mass. So when it comes to protein, aim for 3 to 4 servings of protein per day. And you may be thinking, oh God, Caroline, that seems like a lot. I will feel like a bodybuilder. But very, very simply, if you eat no protein at the moment, aim for 1 serving. If you currently eat 1 serving a day, aim for 2. And if you have 2, aim for 3, and so on. And build it up in that way. It's not something that you need to drastically change overnight, but I would definitely become aware of your protein intake. Which leads me nicely to number 3 of our nutritional guidance for menopause. Make sure that you're eating regularly enough. So if you can't get 3 to 4 servings of protein in per day, try increasing the frequency that you are eating in the day. Typically, when I sit down with ladies, inevitably the conversation will involve how very busy their working weeks are. And I get it completely. I really, really do. We don't have enough time. But we may find that when it comes to nutrition, this presents in a number of ways. So they may or may not have breakfast, dependent on the individual. And the day tends to then run away. So they can potentially go all day skipping lunch. So not having breakfast, sometimes not having lunch, maybe surviving on coffee or tea. We see that a lot. And typically they'll get to the end of a long day. They're exhausted. Their energy is very, very, very low. Lots of fatigue. Mid-afternoon slump is something that we hear a lot about. They go home and they'll eat a large evening meal, potentially snack afterwards, and go straight to bed. And for a number of reasons, and when weight management is the goal, we definitely want to be avoiding going these long spells of the day without eating. We've been talking a lot about hormone fluctuations, ultimately decline, but a lot of hormone fluctuations. And with those fluctuations can come mood and energy dips. We hear ladies feeling unexplainable moments of feeling lethargic, feeling fatigued. And what will exacerbate that, those energy peaks and troughs, is going long spells without eating, right? Your body relies on caloric intake for energy. So if you are not eating enough, or you're not eating frequently throughout the day, you're not helping yourself when it comes to combating against this low energy. If you're missing or you're skipping meals, it's likely a planning issue. So either you've not carved out enough time in your day to take breaks, or you've not found efficient meals that are working with your day. We're not trying to add something, you know, an extra to do in your busy day. Absolutely not. We're trying to come up with solutions that work with you, not against you. And before you say, Caroline, I don't have enough time, you know, I've got back-to-back meetings, I've got things going on, I'm running from one thing to the next. We've talked on this podcast so much about stress management, boundaries, and productivity. And don't take my word for it. We've had so many expert voices on, and they've been so encouraging around taking breaks with a view to boosting productivity and effectiveness. So unfortunately, we've run out of excuses to use the "I don't have time." No, we do. We need to find the time. And that this is where working with a coach can be very, very helpful. It can be really helpful to find someone who can look at your specific demands and schedule in your diary and find ways that will work for you. I have clients who will send me you know, where their office is, or the options that are closest to them around their work, and we will focus and hone in on the best options so that if they do need to have a convenient or a grab and go lunch, they know what to grab that's going to be in line with their goals. So they no longer need to make these kind of erratic spur of the moment decisions. For me, I've got a scrambled egg and salad lunch that I go to that's super, super high in protein. It takes less than 5 minutes to make, less than 5 minutes to eat normally if I'm doing it between calls. And it works really, really well for me. So when someone says I don't have time, it's not about the time, it's about, right, what is missing in your day that's not allowing you to take that little moment where you can take stock. And understanding that actually your energy is going to be higher throughout the remainder of the day if you can take this moment to get some fuel and get some nutrition on board. Okay, so things come up. I totally, totally get it. And this is where snacks can be really, really handy to keep us fueled and bridge the gap between main meals. But when it comes to these snacks, be very, very considerate about what you are choosing to put into the system. A lot of ladies will relay to me that they will find themselves grazing mindlessly. And usually the grazing options aren't things that are going to be in line with their goals. When it comes to snacks, I prefer to keep it protein and fat based. So I like protein yogurts, lots of nuts, whole nut cupboard full of a variety. I've got a little cup that I fill up. It's a small little espresso cup, and I'll fill it with a variety of different nuts and seeds. Cheeses work really well, nut butters with some fruit, things like that. You want to aim to keep your blood sugar levels nice and stable, and ultimately this will help, as we've mentioned, keep our mood and that energy nice and stable along with it. Okay, so eating is a good thing. We want to make sure that we're eating nice and frequently, but that we are eating food groups that are in line with our goals. The next one, alcohol and limiting our alcohol intake. If weight management is the goal, then consider your alcohol intake. General rule of thumb, if you want to keep it super, super, super simple when it comes to alcohol, no drinking Sunday to Thursday. Drink on a Friday or a Saturday, depending on what you've got going on that week, and have no more than three drinks. Simple as. So if there is only one set of guidelines that you followed when it came to alcohol, there you go. Easy. Unfortunately, as we age, we become more sensitive to alcohol, and our body generally holds less water. So any alcohol that we consume is less dilute as a byproduct. And that can, although it's slightly debated, it can perhaps go some way to explaining why hangovers are worse as we get older. And I know it can be particularly challenging because we have been talking about sleep and stress. And during this time of life, for a lot of women, they do find that the stress levels are high. And they've had a very, very busy working day. The one thing that they look forward to very often is coming home and having a glass of wine to help them wind down. And I get it, we've all been there. But although the wine makes us feel good in the short term, and it can help us feel as though we're getting to sleep more easily, and this is where the issues arise, it will interfere with the quality of your sleep. So you'll achieve less great quality sleep, and you're likely to wake up feeling more groggy. Many women will also find that alcohol will exacerbate their menopausal symptoms, particularly those vasomotor symptoms that we were discussing. So the hot flashes and night sweats. Some women find that particularly red wine seems to be the trigger. So if a glass of Merlot is your tipple of choice, unfortunately, and for a lot of women I've spoken to, red wine seems to be the one. So you may wish to either remove completely or switch up your drink of choice if weight management and easing those menopausal symptoms is the goal. I think it's worth taking a moment to mention as well, and just a gentle reminder that there is a lot of evidence to suggest that particularly excessive alcohol intake does negatively impact our general mental well-being. It's often linked with depression, self-harm, and even suicide. And you know, I don't want to go down this route, but I think it's worth reminding ourselves that in the long term, alcohol does have a depressive quality. And if we want to, at this time, put ourselves in the best possible position for success and to feel great and feel energized and full of vitality, that we may want to consider our alcohol intake. The other thing that I'll just mention as well is the associated health risks. So increased alcohol consumption is linked, of course, with osteoporosis, bone fractures, breast cancer, heart disease, and I mentioned it, depression, as well as risk of many other cancers, strokes, and damage to liver and nervous system. You'll know a lot of those from what we've gone through in the first episode of this podcast series. Menopause is also linked to a lot of these conditions. So bringing the two together is potentially something that we want to be mindful of as we go through our menopausal journey. So limit our alcohol intake where we can. And the last thing that I'll mention is being consistent with our patterns of eating. Remember, when it comes to diet, we need to consider the whole week, not just a few days of the week when our diet's great. So your behaviors over a 7-day period will contribute. So bearing in mind, it's what we're doing Monday to Sunday, not just Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, when it's easy to stick to our dieting principles. Try and keep in mind the impacts of the entire week and keep your patterns of eating, so things like portion sizes, keep food groups similar across 7 days, not just for a couple of days of the week. And by all means, it doesn't mean missing out on things like, you know, brunches, dinners out, social occasions, the things that typically happen at the weekend. It doesn't mean that you need to miss out on any of those things. It's just being mindful and conscious over the entire week and just bearing in mind that our behaviors do matter, particularly if weight loss is the goal. What can be a really, really frustrating cycle is to achieve our dieting goals, say Monday to Thursday or Monday to Friday, and then throw it all out the window come Saturday or Sunday. Ideally, we want to find a pattern of eating that works very, very well for you and that you enjoy. And ultimately, if you really, really enjoy it, you'll be able to be adherent to it over a 7-day period, and it shouldn't feel like a big task. So that's again where working with a coach can really, really help you find principles that work for you. It's definitely how we coach our clients, is through a principle-led approach so that it can be adaptable depending on what you may be up to. And I hope you do get to do all these lovely things at weekends and enjoy yourself. Just a couple of other, we've talked about the do's, let's just go into some of the don'ts. Please don't crash diet, particularly during this time of life. So by that, I mean go on an incredibly calorie restrictive diet. Please don't cut out carbs completely. This is one that gets a lot of airtime, particularly in the menopause space, but carbs, carbohydrates do have their place in a healthy, well-balanced diet. It's potentially knowing where to pop them in that works for you. Definitely don't stop eating. So kind of an extension of the crash dieting, but I know a lot of ladies will, you know, out of sometimes when our mood is low as well, that can really hamper our appetite, which can come back and bite us. So please make sure that you are eating enough and avoid drinking a glass of wine every single night. I know, again, like we've mentioned with the alcohol, it can be easy to slip into, but if health is the goal, definitely drinking every night is not going to be helpful. So the menopause, the tools that we use around menopause, and particularly here with menopause weight gain, I'm going to reserve a space in this recording for that. It is a real consideration and it's a real conversation that we're having with a lot of ladies, that remember that weight gain can often be a byproduct of aging generally. And we can see why it happens. So generally, as we age, we tend to move less. Perhaps we stop exercise. Sometimes this can be down to injury. I see this happens a lot. Sometimes we will find that as we get older, aches and pains, and we can get injured. And for a lot of people, that then stops them exercising completely. But we tend to move less, stop exercising. Perhaps we're not changing the way that we eat. So we mentioned about muscle mass before, but if we're moving less, we once might have been eating in what was a caloric deficit or maintenance. So we were able to maintain our weight by eating a certain way, but now we're moving less, but still consuming the same amount of food. You can see why that would very easily lead to weight gain. And this is why weight gain tends to happen fairly steadily over time. And I know that's very, very frustrating for a lot of people, but it's because they are changing kind of the dials of movement and intake very, very gradually, but over time we can start to see that that impacts our body composition. Tools that we like to use with our client base: keep a photo food diary. I find that this is the easiest and most honest way to document the food that you're consuming. And like I say, one of the things that I hear a lot from ladies is, Caroline, my diet's really good. Actually, it's not an area that I worry about. And actually, when we dive into the nutrition side, there's a lot of things that can be tweaked and changed. And that's not, again, I'm not scaremongering you, but if you do something like a photo food diary exercise, it lays it bare. It allows you to see exactly what's going on. You can't kid yourself, particularly if you're being really honest with the documentation. It's there. You can see it. You can start to make these adjustments that we've been discussing in this episode. If you can, if this is applicable to you, if you can add timings, that's even better. And I would definitely look at weekends. So again, we've been talking a lot about the consistency across the board. I would definitely include the weekends in your photo food diary. Include things like hot drinks, alcohol for the most realistic view, and that be consistent with it. So be willing to look at it objectively with a fresh pair of eyes. Again, this is where a coach can be very, very helpful to come in and tell you, show you where to make the most effective tweaks. But look at your photo food diary and be willing to tweak, then repeat the exercise and improve your diet over a period of time. I would go through a checklist of the things that we've talked about today, the five areas. So eating whole foods, eating protein nice and regularly, eating regularly, limit alcohol, and being consistent with your patterns of eating. Go through that 5-point checklist and rate yourself out of 10. There are probably a few areas there that you could pinpoint straight away that need a little bit of work. And I'd hone in on those and start working on them right away in line with the things that we've talked about. The last thing that I'll mention today is supplements. So I don't want to go too much into this because for me, I really do work on a nutrition-led approach. So I think before we go into talking about supplements, we should always make sure that we are doing as much as we can through the diet. The analogy I like with this one is your diet, so the foods that we consume day to day, that's like your main outfit, and your supplements are your accessories. You want to make sure that you've got your main outfit on before you'd even think about putting your accessories on. Okay, you always do one first, then the other. So make sure that your main outfit is in place, make sure that your diet is in place, then and only then would I look at supplementation. I personally believe, irrespective of whether I've female is menopausal or not, there are some basics that should be in the supplement toolkit, and then some menopause ones that I would recommend on top of that. But the basics and the supplements that I personally take: a good quality vitamin D, and this is really, really important at all times of the year, particularly if you live in the northern hemisphere. But I would definitely be taking a vitamin D. I like an omega in there as well, so I take a combined omega-3, 6, and 9. I personally take creatine and greens powder every single day. I would recommend it. It's something that I do. When it comes to menopause, there are two that I would definitely think about. One being calcium. Of course, we talk a lot about estrogen in its relation to bone health. So calcium, of course, as we know, favorable for bone health, as well as magnesium. And there are different types of magnesium, generally speaking. It depends on the absorbency of how you take your magnesium. Sam Varali talked about it on our immunity podcast, but magnesium can help with help support the body, and also is linked to sleep and stress management as well. So it can be very beneficial. But those are some of the supplements that I might consider. Please make sure that you have your base nutrition in place before you go down that route. It's like putting a plaster over a wound to jump in head first with the supplements and not think about your base diet, but worth considering. Okay, I'm just going to close on the point that no matter where you are on your menopause journey, whether you are perimenopausal, whether you're not even thinking about menopause yet, whether you're listening to this series of episodes because you just want to be more informed about the future. Amazing. It really, really is. Whether you feel that you might be perimenopausal, you are definitely menopausal, perhaps you're in your postmenopause years, it is never too late or too early to start considering our overall health. Very often speak to ladies who say, "Oh, Caroline, I dealt with the menopause a decade ago. It's not applicable to me." It absolutely Absolutely is. In our post-menopause years, we definitely want to be considering longevity, our health longer term. If you are in the midst of menopause, perhaps you haven't been exercising for years, perhaps you think that your diet isn't great, and it's still worth thinking about making those changes now. To say there's no such time as the perfect time. Now, the best time to start was yesterday, but the second best time is now. So there isn't a perfect chance. If I could have ladies in their early 20s, thinking about this as early as possible, I would, because everything that we've mentioned today has benefits at every stage of life. As we mentioned, there's no menopause specific diet. If I could have ladies being conscious of this as early as possible, I absolutely would. And I think it really goes in our favor to know this information as early as absolutely possible, because you can start making these little tweaks and changes. And once it's ingrained, once it's a habit, once it's part of your routine, once it's just how you do your weekly food shop or just how you eat, it does make life easier. Of course it does. So we can start straight away and start making these changes to the diet. So I hope this episode has been helpful. As ever, we're going through a series of menopause specific episodes. We started with what is menopause and the associated health risks. We talked about the symptoms. We've gone into nutrition today. We're going to move on to exercise in our next episode, and then we're going to look at menopause in the workplace. So stick with us as we go through this series. If you find this episode helpful, I thank you so much for reaching this point in the into the recording this week. If you found it valuable, there are two ways to show your support for the show, and I would be incredibly appreciative if you did either of them. The first one is to scroll down on your podcast platform of choice. You're probably listening to me on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Hit the subscribe button or the follow button. It would be very much appreciated. Or send it to someone who you know. Perhaps you've had a conversation with a friend, someone in your inner circle, a colleague, a family member. Maybe they mention menopause or just low energy or wanting to make changes to their diet. This might be the episode to send to them. If we can spread more value, reach more ears, that will help me one step of the way on my mission. And if you're interested in one-to-one coaching, if you've really resonated with my approach, maybe you think that this approach sounds really realistic and practical for your life, but you want to know how to make it work specifically for you, get in touch. I'd love to hear about your lifestyle. I'd love to hear about what's holding you back at the moment, but ultimately what your goals are, how I can help you reach those goals. My calendar link is in the show notes below. Scroll down. See if there's any times available over the next little while. We can sit down and have a chat about how we may be able to step in and help you. A reminder that this podcast episode series is for information purposes only. If you've got any medical questions or concerns, do reach out to your medical practitioner. Okay, on that note, have a wonderful rest of your week, and we'll catch up next time on the Health Hacks podcast.